So here I am. I finished college. I'm teaching for 2 years, and I do go on an interview. And the first question is, well, how would you feel being the only colored in the office? And so I kind of just looked at him, because that was a question that I'd never been asked. Colored? What does that mean? And I said, well, I guess I've been the first in a lot of things I've done. So, and it really, I've kind of not had a problem with it. I don't think I'd have a problem with IBM.
Hello, listeners, and thank you for joining us this week. I'm Allie White, and welcome to Generations, where Patricia Bransford, my grandmother, and I will shine a light on issues of race and gender, and also the intersection of race and gender, from the perspectives of two different generations that are not typically covered in our educational curriculum, but are learned from firsthand experiences.
I want to ask you if there are any, just to start off this episode, I want to ask you if there are any things that you've learned over your 80 years that are not taught in our traditional educational curriculum in terms of race and gender? And then I guess a more centered question would be, do you think that your experience as a Black woman was part of your schooling? And were you conscious of yourself as a Black woman in a white, male-dominated world?
That's a very good question. Because I would say at this point in my life, I don't have a very clear recollection of being different. I don't know if it's because the school did a good job of integrating me into their all-white world, school environment, or if I brought enough of me to the table so that I didn't feel that I lacked anything, if you will. I had a very close family. And in fact, as I moved from North Carolina with my nuclear family, father, mother, two sisters, I moved into a household in Washington that was an extension of my mother's family and included about 13 or 14 people in a large urban brownstone where I was actually learning and also managed by all of them as a child, as a 7-8-year-old child. And so when I attended school, I didn't feel excluded, if you will, or exceptional. I felt like I was the youngest in a high school because I had skipped a couple of grades when I was in North Carolina. And so I felt more like the youngest than I felt Black or different in terms of color. I felt more Christian and Catholic than I felt any racial barriers, if you know what I mean. So I grew up in the South, as you know, in my own family environment, not because I felt excluded or I was aware of being excluded, but because that's the way my family really raised me. More family oriented than community oriented. And maybe that was to keep me away from or to protect me from the segregation in the South, protected me from seeing it and having it impact what I felt about myself. And in fact, my parents, my father actually brought in a whole order of nuns to, as missionaries, to open a school there. So I felt my parents were very much involved with Christian education and making it available to people in that community. So I guess I'm going around touching a few things to see if I can answer your question with as much focus, because I haven't really thought about myself, or I don't really remember viewing myself when I was in this integrated environment as being different. I felt I was raised without seeing myself as different color-wise or race-wise. And so it didn't affect me that I was the only Black child in this school. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. So correct me if I'm wrong, but okay, so you were the first Black child in D.C. to go to a fully white school?
Yes, I think you're right, a fully white school. Because integration in Washington happened in 1955. And this was set in 1948.
Okay.
So I was actually integrating this Catholic school in 1948. And at that time, public schools were still not integrated.
Do you have any stories you can share from like your remembrance at, of this time when you were the only Black child?
In the white school?
Yes.
I did see a lot more socialization without me.
Yeah.
I did see that there was a lot more planning that I was not involved in, mm-hmm. about the weekend parties or who was going to the movies or whatever. There were a couple of other incidents I do remember. One is there was a prize for the best students in history in a class, and I was one of them. And I did, it wasn't right in my face kind of discussed, but I did realize that there seemed to have been a problem with whether they could take me or not to have lunch. That whether that particular restaurant would accept me or not. Because, of course, at the same time, the department stores did not serve African Americans in their restaurants. I remember going and there was no problem at all. But I do remember the school worrying about whether I would be accepted. I also remember that they had tea parties with the boys' school and they were wondering if there was at least one boy of color that would maybe ask me to dance. I thought that was funny. They were really worried that I would, I guess, sit out and not have anybody to dance with by choice, or they really did not want to encourage that. And I have no idea today.
Okay, that's great. I also, can you explain your experience, you know, being one of the first Black women to rise in white corporate America, you know, like you working at IBM or... how you were able to find success in the world and any like obstacles that you might have come across?
Yeah. You know, this is a very good question because last week, Tom and I said we had some reason to be in the Larchmont area. And so we kind of drove to the house that we lived in. And then I became really depressed. It's such a beautiful place that we lived in that we selected after we left Washington, which was my home, which is really what I described to you, right? And I just really felt, and right now I'm like welling up. Tearing up in a way that I don't think that Larchmont really treated my kids well, that there may have been bullying that affected them that I didn't even know about, maybe because bullying just was not in my life the way I was raised by my family. And maybe I expected people to treat, you know, people equally. But in fact, I was always finding it in the school system. and having to go and talk to teachers about the way, you know, one of my kids was treated. And I thought, wow, maybe this whole thing with my being oblivious to racial differences has led to my kids not getting the kind of background they need to be strong in this environment. And then so back into meeting and marrying Tom at IBM. And I remember that IBM was integrating in 1963 its organization, its business for the first time. So it kind of sought some internal connections in the community to find people they wanted to bring to IBM. So it wasn't like an open, you know, invitation to join the IBM as a company. IBM decided it was going to, you know, kind of do the research to find people they felt met the, I would say, the kind of workforce they wanted, the kind of people that they wanted in the workforce. So they didn't, you know, they didn't, they kind of did it through connections.
Okay.
Social connection. So they found my mother through her contacts, and they found me as somebody they wanted to interview. So here I am. I finished college. I'm teaching for 2 years, and I do go on an interview. And the first question is, well, how would you feel being the only color in the office? And so I kind of just looked at him, because that was a question that I'd never been asked. Colored? What does that mean? And I said, well, I guess I've been the first in a lot of things I've done. So, and it really, I've kind of not had a problem with it. I don't think I'd have a problem with IBM. I mean, I don't see myself as being so different from the kind of employees you have. So I was brought in, I was accepted. I was, and then, so I became socially involved with people at IBM. I still have friends now that I live with. And so I became very close now in this social circle of people who worked for IBM and who are still my friends, deep friends, right? And then through socializing, it was funny because I ended up meeting Tom and a lot of other, you know, young men who I went out with as part of the IBM experience. And then ended up marrying Tom and leaving IBM to raise a family, right? And so I was kind of out of the workforce for a while. But we moved to New York because Tom continued to work for IBM, and he was promoted to an office in the New York office. So we moved our whole family to Larchmont, New York.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's like, I don't know how to say this, but that's like so much to go through, you know, in your life. I feel like you had so many like defining experiences. Like you were the first in so many things that you pursued, which I think is amazing. And I also wanted to, I heard you talking about before, you were talking about how you feel like you never really identified as the other or like excluded. Were there any times when you truly felt that way, you know, like when you were growing up or when you were like a young adult or in your teen years? Like, because I know that you went to the Martin Luther King Jr. speech with Tom. And did any of that resonate with you about like what he was talking about?
I have to say it was an outside experience. It never really found its way in my body and my mentality and my heart. I never felt like I was a person who was excluded or discriminated against, or that I was hearing my story at the Lincoln Memorial from Martin Luther King. As I continued to be, you know, became an adult, worked for corporation, I traveled. I, you know, really identified more with people in other countries like Italy and Mexico. And, you know, I felt like I was almost part of the world.
That's good. That's great to hear. I also kind of wanted to just like bring it more up to present day. I just wanted to ask you about what you think about the Black Lives Matter protests and what's going on now.
Well, I'm very proud of the people who are protesting, because it's very clear that even though I don't see it myself as a problem individually, I see it as a problem for the community. I see that we're a country where there is just a huge gap between those who have money and those who don't. And I think that's a recipe for failure over time, that we are not giving disadvantaged, and it could be white, but mainly Black and Latin, Black and brown. We're not giving them the same level of education as in public schools that people are getting in Catholic and private schools. And so for me, that's a recipe for failure. So I'm looking at the fact that as I grew up, I may not have seen myself as different, but I did see the fact that some people were not given an equal shot as being successful. They weren't, you know, it's almost like you are overlooked. You're their favorite, their teacher's pets. Maybe there are, you know, I never felt like I was part of, you know, the selected group in a school that was part of, you know, that I was always in the honor society and I did, but I was never selected. I remember feeling that I was never selected as, you know, those who were perceived as the top students.
Wow.
And I thought I was just not in the process. You know, I was just not in the, but it didn't bother me because I had so much else in my life. But now when I look at Black Lives Matter, I'm really thinking we're going through a whole evolution in this country. And that all history is going to change. A lot of academic learning will change because it was all based on white privilege. And as more and more, you know, that changes because of Black Lives Matter, you'll see a whole slew of new history books that are written that begin to see a whole nother environment or ecosystem. Do you see what I mean? And so a lot of the history books that are being done now are kind of anecdotal, but there are people who are picking out particular years and kind of magnifying them to look at how we are where we are because of what happened in Jim Crow or Reconstruction or what happened between 1940 and 1960 after the war. And, you know, when people were given, you know, some of the like PPP is in Congress right now, so that there were always those giveaways at times when people needed help, but Blacks were not included in that. So by definition, they have remained, you know, at the bottom, at the very bottom of the economic scale, and separated from the best education in some cases. Not because they're not worthy, not because they can't, you know, they're incompetent, but just because, right? And as we begin to now look at that at differently, we are going to have a whole new evolution in this country.
That's great. Yeah. So to kind of like tie it up, I also want to talk about how, like, for me, you know, as a young woman, through social media, information, you know, comes very fast. And like, there are a lot of opinions flooding the internet and like the news and social media. And I mean, I feel like it's natural, you know, and to spend hours on social media, which is like consciously and unconsciously looking at messages and spending many hours, like looking at information about other people and like how they're living and like managing and experiencing the world. And I feel like the good thing about it is that my generation, they're getting like a very broad and like diverse visual of the world. But the downside is that we don't have the older generation, who like many of you guys aren't on social media. We don't have the wisdom of the older generation and like your lessons of race and gender that you've learned throughout your life, and like lessons of intersectionality, and how all that can better help us understand ourselves and the world around us and chart our paths successfully forward. And I think that what we're doing right now is really good, because I would like us to use the space, you know, to find language to help us clearly articulate the real issues that all of us face. And I think that together we can learn from each other and share with each other to shine a light on both the challenges and possible solutions.
See, well, I hope you're able to write that down. That was exquisite, the way you said that. And I would love to, like, read it every morning when I wake up. So write it down and send it to me. I thought it was brilliant the way you said that. And I'm just really pleased that, you know, you have a very deep knowledge and appetite to learn more and to see how it impacts the generation that you are living in. Because it really will define your opportunities, like you said. And I'm just really proud of your education and the life that you've led, and the deep feelings that you've always had, even from a child. You've always searched out people for closeness and also to be part of. And I've seen that, and I've marveled that you've been able to put all that together and end up where you are today.
Thank you.
Interviewing me and hearing all that I think. I mean, the only one thing that I think I alluded to but didn't talk directly about, and that is that, so as I was growing up, this big family that my grandmother had, people aren't having big families. That's another difference. But she had 11 living, and she was one of 13 living. So there were, you know, a lot of family members around that became your life. You didn't need anything else. You had all these. And as I said, they all lived in this one house. And then when they moved out and got married, they even lived, the radius was across the street, right? They had homes across the street. Or now they're strewn all over the world. Mm-hmm. Families do not, for the most part, they may have come back during the pandemic, but for the most part, they don't live together. And a lot of that was corporate America, hiring people and then moving them around, and then integration, which caused them to meet other families and people from other countries. And so it kind of, and what Black and brown people have to do now is get back to their roots and realize the strength that they have in a community. You know, not one or two successes that you talk about, but the success of the race. So I think that's the bottom line. To the extent we can get there, that we, because we're kind of strewn all over the place, so it's going to be difficult. It's going to be a challenge to look at Blacks as a community as opposed to, you know, individual successes, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we can definitely talk more about that in the coming episodes.
This was Generations. I'm Allie White. Thanks for listening, and thanks to my grandmother for joining me. Make sure to catch the next episode soon.